This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 355 for Friday, not Wednesday, April 3rd, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Alistair McFly. You can find him at twitch.tv/AlistairMcFly and at iMcFly on Twitter. Welcome back, my friend.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Hey, it's only been like a month or so, because we had you on at the beginning of Picard, and now we're going to have you on for the end of Picard, which is something I'm really looking forward to get into. Yeah. don't worry, folks. We'll give you fair warning before we dive in. And yes, it will be spoiler-filled. So the main discussion this week you will want to skip, but we have a few other bits of housekeeping to get to before that. We are recording late this week just because I had a very busy week with some client work, and I wasn't able to actually finish Picard until just today. Just on my lunch break, I finished it up. So it was good to not have to rush through that. Like, I was able to watch one a day this week to finish things up rather than having to push through for Wednesday. So I appreciate everyone's patience on that. I know some people get excited on Wednesdays when the Citadel Cafe comes out.
Well, you still managed to make it like 2 days before the anniversary of First Contact with the Vulcans.
Oh, really?
Which is April 5th. Interesting. Yeah, April 5th, 2063.
I was saying, it's not 2020. It has to be a lot further in advance.
No. We haven't met the Vulcans yet.
So 2063
is when we're supposed to make first contact with the Vulcans.
43 years from now, I will be 84. Potentially still alive. Awesome.
We've got that to look forward to. The only problem is we also have to go through World War III beforehand, but
small.
There's that little caveat.
Yeah, small hurdles. Yeah, baby steps, Alistair.
On the journey to get
baby steps. We're working on it. Speaking of the schedule and whatnot, I have some announcements regarding the Citadel Cafe Patreon page, and that is a bonus for everyone that is currently a supporter. Given that everyone is spending more time at home these days, I thought I would tweak the entry level of the Citadel Cafe Patreon to grant cafe community members access to the Barista Cut episodes. Previously, the Barista Cut episodes were a tier above, but now at any level on the Citadel Cafe Patreon, if you decide to support us, then you can get access to all of the Barista Cut episodes from 2020. That includes things like bonus episodes with Megan and Johnny on the D&D episode, another bonus episode with Johnny about Star Wars, episode 9, as well as the Town Hall episode that Alistair and I did together a couple weeks ago. So there's a bunch of stuff there. And I'm going to leave this up for the foreseeable future. So as I have a little bit of extra time with some guests and some people on the show, you can get access to bonus episodes. Sometimes Lou and I will dive into like a bonus video game, like what's hot, what to talk about, what to play, that kind of thing. So I'm hoping to give some people some more resources for home. If you want to check that out, that is at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We have an email this week. I've been kind of tinkering with Lord Valor's email. He sent in one really long one, and I've been chopping it up and spreading it out over a couple of shows. This one is LV's Nerd Mount Rushmore. You might remember this question from Brockett a couple weeks ago. This question has had me thinking for a long time. What are the four faces of my Nerd Mount Rushmore? The four faces I would put on my Mount Rushmore would be 1, Harry Potter, 2, Thor, 3, Buzz Lightyear, and 4, Tim Taylor. Thanks for the wonderful podcast. It's great for long drives. Lord Valor. Thank you very much, Lord Valor. Appreciate it as always. Great to hear back from people. We have another email as well sitting in the basket for next week. It's involving video games, so I wanted to save it for when Lou was on the show.
Is Tim Taylor like Tim the Toolman Taylor?
So this is what I'm thinking. So Brockett requested fictional characters, right? Mm-hmm. So Tim Taylor,
which that
his real name, but it's also the character he played on Tim the Toolman Taylor on Home Improvement.
Well, it was Tim Allen
Sorry, you're right. I get the conflated.
Yeah, but yeah, very common in comedies is that yes, they share the same first name a lot of the time.
Yes, exactly.
As the real life actor.
So yeah, so we'll start there. So Tim the Toolman Taylor, it's a very interesting pick because a lot of us chose like fantasy, sci-fi, comic book heroes, like that sort of thing. I find it really interesting that Lord Valor has like Tim the Toolman Taylor as one of his nerd Mount Rushmore. And I think as a cartoonist, if I was to draw this, that he would be in that face. Like you'd have Harry Potter with the glasses. Mm. You'd have Thor looking stoic. Buzz Lightyear would be pointing to infinity and beyond. And Tim Taylor would be mid bark, just on the Nerd Mount Rushmore. I found it interesting too that Buzz Lightyear, voiced by Tim Allen, is also yes. there.
And yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering, because it's like half the list is Tim Allen, which mm-hmm. is great.
So we've got Harry Potter, which is like magic, mm-hmm. curiosity. He's got a good heart. We've got Thor, who's headstrong, but also does...
Worthy,
good call. Makes the right decisions. You know, he's a hero. He does, you know, saves the day, that sort of thing. Buzz Lightyear, hopefully misguided? No, hope. What's the word? Because he's not. He knows he can't fly, right? Like he's just because. And I guess the character is going to full arc. And I have.
It's just a lot of positivity.
Yeah, a lot of positivity and just like boisterous. Like you know, like he's always talking in that radio voice. You know. Anyway, yeah, an interesting assortment. I find it interesting too that Lord Valor didn't explain why. He just like here they are, boom, like because we all had to justify on the show. But no, I think that's great. It's really interesting. I like this as like a nerd icebreaker question. You know, like if you're talking to people, if you're at a party or if you're playing a party game or something like that, it's kind of a fun thing to post out there. I'm surprised Brockett hasn't turned it into a meme. You know how you see those things where people answer like four things or they post three things on Instagram and then they tag four friends to participate and the thing goes off like a, you know, chain letter. I ignore them, by the way.
There you go.
People that do that.
But there's this call to arms to actually.
Yeah. Brockett, challenge accepted, or at least challenge put out there. But yeah, thanks very much. And if you would like to email the show and let us know about your nerd Mount Rushmore or come up with something completely different, if you've got thoughts on Picard that you've been waiting to get off your chest because you were worried about spoilers for the hosts, please do write in. It's thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Really easy to figure out. We have that posted on the website as well. So hopefully we will hear from you because we have been finding over the last few weeks as more and more email has started to come into the show, it's providing some really unique discussion to kick things off, which I really appreciate because otherwise we're in Canada and we're at home. So we're not even talking about the weather, which is all we had left. So if you want, please write in, and let us know what you think about your favorite nerdy thing of whatever is going on. Let us know what you're into, recommend something. That's the other thing. Recommend something for us and for the listeners. If you've got a new thing that you're playing or watching or doing, let us know, or reading. That's another thing too. So, we are now going to talk about Star Trek Picard. We have both finished it. Hopefully you have too. If you haven't, bye. We'll see you at the end of this, and hopefully next week. But I really cannot emphasize enough that we just can't talk about this without spoilers. So here we go. Star Trek Picard. I finished this overall today. So in a way, I'm still kind of processing. But I was watching the last episode with the knowledge that I was going to be talking about it today. So I was kind of making some mental notes on what I thought was kind of like what's the word I'm looking for? Like the poignant things that stood out to me. Overall, my opinion of the show hasn't changed now that it's done. I did waver in the middle. As we mentioned on our last episode, I found it very slow to start. And you have to stick with it. It never gets exciting, with the exception of maybe the last episode. But there's never any kind of like breakneck or exciting moments. Well, I shouldn't say never. There's not a lot of them until very late in the series. But you have to stick with it for the story to start to pick up. The story does pick up. The pace of the plot and all that kind of stuff does pick up, I want to say about mid-season, right after the episode where I kind of bailed. And I didn't bail for any other reason other than time constraints, and I wasn't super thrilled with the Far Cloud episode. It wasn't my favorite. It reminded me of the hologram episodes on Star Trek, you know, the ones where the ones like, well, we can't think of anything really cool in space to do this week, so we're going to go back to 1945 England or something crazy, you know.
The only ones
of those I did like were the Sherlock Data ones. Those were fun.
Yeah, where you had Moriarty actually as a, like, and I do like that they brought Moriarty back, because they're kind of like, you know, we're going to look into a solution for you to get you off this holodeck because you are sentient.
Yeah.
And suddenly he comes back. Have you done anything? No. They're suddenly having to deal with he's here now and we haven't done a thing. We haven't got an answer for him yet. And that worked really well.
Yeah, no, and I agree that there are some offshoots and some breaths that you need.
Yeah.
So as the story picks up, you start to be rewarded with the reunion of Picard with other Star Trek characters. Starts with Seven of Nine, which is really cool, by the way. I was not expecting that. And then you move on to seeing Riker and Deanna Troi and some of the other episodes. And that's when I was bitten again. I think it was episode six or seven was the one with Riker and Troi. And that's where you get that real pang of nostalgia for those three together, specifically Riker and Picard, doing their banter back and forth and stuff like that. How their relationship has been maintained, but it's also changed, you know, in ways, because you're relieving the Starfleet command chain. You know, like they're not on the bridge, so they're a little bit of a different posturing and stuff like that, which I thought was really cool. And then the Romulans overall as the bad guys, I felt made sense. I like that the ominous, I can't remember what they called it. Not the assimilation, started with an A.
Admonition.
Admonition, thank you. So that, to me, was pointing towards this crazy big bad thing that was going to happen, but we never get to see it, which I thought was good. I preferred the biggest enemy that we have is ourselves, meaning the flaws in the Federation, the flaws in the relationship with the Federation and the Romulans, the flaws in the Romulans and how they see the world. Like, I mean, the bad guys are already here. We don't need a bigger one. We're already messed up enough as it is. And I liked that. I did feel, to move into a little bit of a criticism. Well, I'll wait. I want to know kind of like your overall thoughts on the show before we get into any kind of like critiques.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when you say about the rewards for the reunions, absolutely. Like, especially with Hugh, I thought that was done really well. In fact, the actors, like, it was never in the script for them to hug. That's when the two of them, like Jonathan Delargo, kind of went to Patrick Stewart and was like, can I hug you with this? Because he just felt like it would make a lot more sense. And it kind of does. And I do like that for him and Seven and Hugh, like there's that whole kind of, they've got this thing with the fact that they were all Borg at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they admit that they still haven't gotten over it and that they never will. It's always going to be that trauma that's been in their lives and that they'll never really move past.
There's a really good conversation with Picard and Seven before she beams back down to Far Cloud.
That's the one.
She was asking about, she's getting a little bit of her humanity back every day. I can't remember quite the exact quote, but she basically asks Picard, like, does it ever end? Like, and he's like, nope, still working on it.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Like, yep. it's still a thing. And I thought they did a really good job of, rather than portraying Picard as any kind of frail old man, even though there are some things that they kind of allude to, they have that psychological PSD weight that he carries around, and that I think helps it substitutes as a don't want to say a weakness. It's more like a, I guess, vulnerability, or it makes you, it, when he has those kind of flashbacks and he can't really, and he has a really a hard time at first being on the Borg artifact, the artifact cube, it makes you realize that he's got some vulnerabilities, and you realize that this might not all go according to plan, but it does so in a way that doesn't make him appear weaker physically, which I think is important.
It makes him feel more human, and that the humanity is there, and that becomes like the whole, like a massive part of the theme throughout the entire season.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the Picard that we've known, which we knew for, was it 14 years that he was playing the role, was somebody who was very steadfast, strong, confident. No matter what happened, you would follow him because, like, he's the leader. He's going to save the day. Mm-hmm. He's going to make the right decision that's going to get us to this point.
Yep.
I've been playing a bit of Star Trek: A Final Unity lately, and there's a lot of times I look at it going, that's what I would do, but that's what Picard would do, so that's probably going to be the right answer than the one that my instinct is.
Yeah.
you know, so it's like, what would Picard do? You know, but there's been mistakes that he's made. He's had losses. There's been 18 years between his final appearance in Star Trek Nemesis and where we see him now. And he's weathered, and as you say, he's vulnerable, and it's a very different chapter in his life as to where he's at, and he doesn't have that confidence there anymore. I mean, he's lost his position at Starfleet, he's lost one of the people he held most dear, which was Data.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost the trust of the Romulan people he was trying to help. He's lost, you know, just the guiding light that the Federation always brought him, you know, and it's really good to kind of see where he's at, try and figure out that 18-year gap and see that kind of come about, and then see him kind of regain that confidence in humanity. And the Picard we get at the end feels a lot more like the Picard we once knew now that he's kind of gone through this entire thing and also got closure, because the... Like, Star Trek Nemesis, critically speaking, not a great film. It's a shame that it was the one that they went out on. But if anything, this gives validity to Data's sacrifice and his death when he sacrificed himself for Picard. And there was never really any wrap-up to it. It's like, Data's gone, and that's it. There was no closure. So, like, as a fan base, it's like, Data died, and there's not been any closure to that at all.
Mm.
This gave that closure, I think, not just to Picard, but I think to the audience as well.
For the audience as well, yeah. No, I did think about that in the final episode, and we'll get into the we'll probably wrap Absolutely, it up yeah. with the ending. But yeah, and I think that it does bring that arc, because and Data is a theme throughout, even though you don't see much of him either in flashback memories, dreams, or in any kind of like personification or communication therein later on. It's because of Soji and how she's a synthetic and how she acts and the fact that she was born of Data's DNA, essentially, even though he doesn't have DNA, but like, it's just the way that she came about and some of the quirks, I guess, of having a synthetic go on this adventure with Picard does kind of harken back to some of those conversations and that relationship. It's different. But it is similar in a way that you still kind of feel that Data-like presence throughout. Once she's activated and she knows that she's not a real person, I find that it was an interesting shift there. But yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, and Data's death was absolutely the catalyst that started this kind of downward fall for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, for it to have that kind of resonating theme.
And that's something that actually makes me, you know, you talk about losing this, you know, Starfleet, not just losing, but like he resigned, like it just, he threw in the towel. So it's not just like losing, but like losing of your own like frustrations and like he had to quit, which is the one thing that he doesn't do. Right. so it's like you say, the weight of it is not lost on viewers. So if we're going to get into any kind of criticisms, they're small. I did find it was quite slow. Like if you weren't invested in Star Trek as a series and as a fan, or as a as an IP, I don't know how much convincing you would need to get through this whole thing. Like, you'd have to be sitting there with the husband or wife or significant other or roommate that's just into this to get through those slow episodes. I feel like they could have maybe moved things a little bit farther along faster. I find, however, the second half moved at a much better pace. Even the slower second half episodes were still good. The Romulans as the bad guys, again, while I agree with that notion, especially the half Vulcan, half Romulan mole in Starfleet, thought that was really well done. Because it gives you that sense of like they're everywhere spies, like the, I can't remember the name of the Romulan secrets ninja people.
There's do you mean the
not
the guy that was there?
Not the good guys.
Do you mean the organization?
The organization.
Because there's the Tal Shiar.
Tal Shiar. The super spy. The spies that even the spies don't know about. The Tal Shiar. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
So the Tal Shiar
is
the Jat Vash. So the Jat Vash are, that's Picard's bodyguard, right?
The Jat Vash were the, no, they were the Romulans who knew about the whole admonition thing, and that they were the ones who were trying to protect against that. So they were sort of separate to the Tal Shiar, who were always kind of the secret organization.
Okay, so the Tal Shiar are the Vulcan in Starfleet, the half Vulcan. She's Tal Shiar, right? Like that's
yes.
Yeah. So okay, so just to clarify for myself and our listeners, Picard's bodyguard, the Romulan. What organization was he from?
He was a Quat something. I can't remember. It's like Quat Malat.
Right.
Something like that.
Okay. Right. So a different, but a different thing altogether.
Yeah. And they were complete enemies of the Tal Shiar. You had the Tal Shiar who lived in secrecy and lies.
Right.
And then the Quat Malat, however it's pronounced, were people who lived in absolute truths and honesty.
Truth and justice, right. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's what I thought.
And stuff. So, yeah, complete polar opposites that you would ever have for Romulans.
Right, which is why he stands in front of you and says, please choose to live or I'm going to kill you. Like, he gives you that out. Like, you have an option.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, for me, while I like the Tal Shiar as, like, the secret service underground bad guy spy stuff, I felt the two Romulans that they had as the quote-unquote face of the enemy, the two actors, to me, weren't fantastic.
The brother and sister?
Yeah, they weren't fantastic. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Not Raffi. Is it Narek? I think Narek was the boyfriend.
Yes.
So he reminds me of Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones.
I can see that.
Not only he looks like him. He also acts like him. He's always shaking. Like, I always feel like he's a wet chihuahua. And so I don't necessarily feel him being very threatening, which is, of course, he's not supposed to be. He's trying to get into Soji's head. Like, he's trying to remove information without her realizing he's removing information. But I also just don't find him threatening in any way, shape, or form. And then to boot, like, I also just, I feel the same way that I feel about him that I felt about Theon. The difference is that Theon redeems himself. And I think they want you to think that Narek redeems himself, but it's too little too late for me in the series. And so I just felt like I'm being told he's doing a good thing now. You have to be okay with him helping them out at the end, which to me was just like, no, this guy would never do that. Like, so it felt...
He also seemed like the last person that that Soji would sort of, you know, stop what she was doing.
Yeah.
To, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you could send anybody else in to talk her out of it, and he just seemed to be the worst person, like the last person on the list that should be doing that.
Yeah.
Given
exactly.
Their history.
Precisely. Yeah, no. So it felt like an odd choice. And then I found his sister, Narissa, I think is her name. One note. Like, she was the bad guy from the 80s movies. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's always frowning. She's always got someone in a headlock or has a knife to the throat. And it just seemed flat. I mean, threatening, great. I mean, I realized at the end that she's basically in it to be in a fist fight with Seven of Nine. Like, that's the whole reason she exists.
do feel like you get justice for Hugh's death. You do get that.
Oh, you do. That fight. Absolutely. You know, no, I get that.
It's like finally payoff because they killed off Hugh.
Yeah, she's walking down. Yeah, she's walking down the halls angry all the time, faster than anybody can keep up. She's barking out orders. Like it just feels like a kind of run of the mill villain. What I'm glad because of the way that they wrapped it up, because of the way that they did the finale with the standoff and some of the speeches that Picard gives, you get that it wasn't her. You get that it wasn't really the Tel Shiar that is the actual villain. It's this flaw in, I want to say humanity, but in organic nature. Like the flaw in organic nature. That's the enemy. Like that is the thing that everybody is combating against. The Romulans just don't realize it. Picard is the only one that seems to have grasped it all. Now, as much as I like the doctor, Dr. Agnes Girardi, I feel like she gets off scot-free and everybody is okay with her murdering what's the guy's name? Maddox. She murders Maddox by turning off his life support halfway through the series. She finally admits it to somebody after she has revealed herself as not only a murderer, but a Tel Shiar spy. And you're just like, and everyone just forgives her. It feels like overnight. It's like in the next meeting, she's there. Everybody's like, we're not dropping you off at Starfleet to go to jail. You're coming with us. I have a tumor in my brain. No one talks about it, FYI, unless you want to piss me off, and we're going to go solve this thing. And then you just have to be okay with all of it. And to me, it was just like, I enjoyed the bit about the, if you treat me like an old man, you're going to make me angry. I thought that was a great line from Picard. Like it was excellent, excellent way to just kind of like, look, I'm being honest with you, but I'm drawing a line at how you're going to treat me. Those are the rules. And I thought that was great. But then how everybody just kind of like rolls over and forgives murder, which as far as I can tell in Star Trek at this time in their timeline is like the number one thing that you can do that people absolutely don't forgive you for, right? And so it just felt weird.
Yeah, well, the direction I come from it with is that there's multiple things here. So in terms of Picard going, we're not dropping you off at the starbase now, I think it's just more kind of, this is more pressing.
Yes. No, I got that.
Is the first thing. But also, she had been in a mind meld with Commander O, this Tal Shiar operative, and she had put in a mental block to prevent her from even revealing what she knows. It was also described that, you know, people have gone absolutely insane to the point of killing themselves just from the information that had been put in there from the admonition, from seeing that, because it wasn't something that was ever designed for organics to be able to process and comprehend. So it's already been kind of established that that makes people absolutely insane. You mix that in with a Tel Shiar operative mind melding with her to force her to do these kind of things, and it's kind of understood that, look, you did something terrible. And it's not suddenly just kind of instantly given away. And even Soong, kind of points out to her, like, you have just put out a bright light in this. Mm-hmm. Like, we're doing what we're doing, but that is still something that you're going to have to live with. But I think at the same time, people are kind of understanding of, she wasn't in her head at that point.
Yeah.
That it wasn't entirely her fault, but...
And yeah. when they do give you a glimpse of her broken psyche, she does a fantastic job. I still think Alison Pill is a phenomenal actor, and she says as much by not saying anything.
She's wonderful in this.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like you can sort of feel the emotional and intellectual constipation as she's trying to like do something or say something or process something. Like you get that she's internally broken. But yeah, I just, like I said, I think it was a pacing thing. Like, while I'm not surprised in the end where they got, it does.
I would agree.
Like,
yeah.
It does kind of feel like when you're watching one a day, just kind of like, I feel like no time has passed by, like none. And even then, because of like this, like 218 Romulan warbirds are going to show up in 7 minutes or in 2 days. Like, so this forgiveness happens in a very short time span, even in Star Trek kind of terms. So I thought that was a little bit strange. I did find the eyeball doorbell scene super gross. I felt it would have been implied by just showing her. They you hear the noise when she digs into someone's head to grab the eye, the synthetic's head, and then if you just show her coming through that door, I would have been okay with that. But
you know,
eye stuff grosses me out, so I'm a little oversensitive.
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't show her taking that out, because we've already gone through that once with Icheb.
Right.
And that was a painful moment to watch, was when they were doing the same with Icheb, when the woman is pulling his eye out as well. And that was a very tough. And in a way, I feel that they had to show that to really get you to feel where Seven was at.
Yes.
With things and what pushes her, because he was like, you know, family to her. He had given up his cortical node. So they're kind of like asking, you know, where's the cortical node? Well, he gave that up for Seven so that she would live and not die when hers failed back in Voyager. You've got that she encouraged him to join Starfleet, and there he is in a Starfleet uniform, you know, and he's kind of done this. So it was really distressing to see that's how he ended up. That was the end of his journey.
Right.
You know, pursuing that you would hope
which
would be so hopeful.
Which was lost on me because I didn't remember him. I thought he was... What I knew about him was still poignant, and I still got it through Jerry Ryan's portrayal and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't remember him from another Star Trek series. Like, I only knew him
different
as far
actor.
As... Oh, maybe that's
it. Was
why.
A different actor, yes. Okay. Same with Maddox as well. So with Maddox, it was a different actor. More nothing confirmed, but he is the director of theater at a university somewhere. He's got a couple of other things that he does as well. I would imagine he just didn't have the time to sign up for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I imagine he probably wanted to, but that's probably what's happened there. They didn't ask the original actor for Icheb to come back.
The other criticism I have has to do with the ending. But I don't want to quite get into that yet. So remind me to come back to it. Remind me to come back to it. It's minor. It's more of a pacing thing.
I think it's going to be hard to have this conversation without discussing the ending though.
I just think it's a good place to talk about it all at once rather than skipping all around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense.
So the questions that I guess the first thing that I wanted to mention was about Picard, which I thought his arc overall was a solid story arc, solid character arc. I like the steadfast that the character maintains, albeit being able to bring more emotional depth to him, given his limited time left. And this isn't a big secret or, you know, spoiler or anything. They tell you in like the first or second episode that this brain abnormality that he's had ever since he was, I think it was the Borg thing that brought it on, right? Like that's the...
No, it's been just a medical condition he's had. It was revealed in the very, in the series finale of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh.
That he would have it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's Arimodic syndrome was what it was referred to. And so when they're showing scenes in the future, he's suffering from that. And so everybody just thinks he's insane and crazy. They're not really taking him seriously.
Right,
but
okay.
It's always kind of there as a kind of, this is potentially going to be an affliction that he'll have later on in life.
What I like about how they handled that is that it only shows its ugly head in like the last episode. Like they really, and they just show it as like a series of like incapacitations. They don't show him going crazy. It doesn't last the whole thing. I'm so glad we don't have to deal with, because I remember that. I'm so glad that they don't show us with Picard speaking the truth for half of this series and no one else believing him, because that's a frustrating experience as a viewer. And that would be not what I would want for this series.
Yeah.
Something that I find very interesting is that they do, of course, call and put very much attention on, you know, Picard's limited time, right? Which, and I understand that this is a reality, but you can't help but also think about Sir Patrick Stewart's time and how he's not a young man. And I didn't like that. Like, I didn't like that reflection. It made me uncomfortable. It's just like, God, this guy's not young. Like, shit. You know, like, just it's the kind of thing where, like, there's very few times over the course of, you know, all the celebrity things that pop up when somebody passes away. You know, like, ultimately it's like, well, that's sad, but doesn't affect me. But there have been...
And for the longest time, he's looked ageless for the longest time as well. And now he doesn't.
He doesn't.
It's suddenly caught up with him.
And here's the thing. It's caught up with him in Picard because he's playing it so. I've seen him on the couch on the Graham Norton show. The guy does not seem, does not strike me as his age, right? Maybe a little bit in how he moves, but other than that, like, he does not, he certainly has all of his faculties, right?
Yeah. Well, Picard himself is supposed to be about 20 years older than Patrick Stewart.
So, no, I got that.
You know, but thanks to modern medicine.
Yes, of course.
You know, obviously he looks a lot better.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, no, I would watch Patrick Stewart read the phone book. So, I mean, like, I really enjoy him. And it was a fantastic series. I'm glad that he was in it. I'm glad that someone convinced him, you know, with good writing, like, that he wasn't duped in doing something he ultimately would not be proud of. Like, I think he can walk away from this feeling very proud to be part of it and helming it and all that kind of stuff. Speaking of fantastic actors, Issa Briones, who plays Soji, she plays her sister, and she plays the synthetic version. Phenomenal acting. Like, just, she flip-flops between being a more emotional human, which she's programmed to being an analytical synthetic. She's dealing with, like, becoming alive, realizing she's an android or a synthetic, and wondering why she has no memories, or if all of her memories are real, struggling to make new memories, all this kind of stuff. The whole way that she connects with Riker's daughter, like, everything just really kind of resonated with me. Not for a minute did anything she ever did pull me out of the show, with the exception of something that was not her fault. It was probably just writing and directing, which was her evil twin doppelganger, which is like a Star Trek rite of passage, I guess. She didn't have a goatee, but she played a synthetic on, I don't remember the name of the homeworld, something four, who you despise from the moment that you meet her. And despite it being the same actor. And again, I also want to say, like, in the process of despising this yellow-skinned synthetic that has, like, the Data eyes played by Issa Briones, it doesn't affect the fact that you still really like Soji. So it's the same actor. Like, it's her. And it's just, it's so good. Like, it's so good that you can look at it. And then when they're green screening the two of them together, you're like, oh, Soji, don't listen to her. She's full of shit. And then you look at this other woman and you're like, get off the screen. Get away. I don't like you.
It's a wonderful parallel for Data's family as well. Good. Because you've got Law, who is an earlier model, who is essentially evil. Yeah. For all intents and purposes. And you've got the same thing where this other one is an earlier model, doesn't have the very human-like body, but again, has that questionable morality about her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah,
the way she pulled it off was great. And she nails Data's head tilt. Absolutely nailed that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She is also an amazing singer.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm not sure if you know this, and obviously we don't want to talk quite about the end just yet, obviously. But when you hear Blue Skies being sung at the end,
that's
being sung by her.
Are you kidding? Wow.
No,
I mean, it was a good song.
The song's even available. Oh yeah, it's even available on Apple Music right now.
Nice.
You know, they've actually released it, so you can actually get it. But yeah, she is a professionally trained singer, and when they found out about that, they went and asked her if she wanted to sing that piece for the end, and it was beautiful.
She has got to be just ridiculously excited to be a part of this, to be the role that she's in. Like, I mean, you're essentially playing Data's daughter. Like, talk about Princess Star Trek, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that the mantle has been passed to you, kid. Like, and I say kid because I got no idea how old she is. I'm going to look this up because, I mean, she's younger than me. I'm telling you that right now. I'm over 40. I can say this about people. she's 20 years younger than me. What? Wait a minute. She's 21?
Yeah.
What? I mean, I thought she was in her mid to late 20s, not because she looks like she's in her mid to late 20s, but because she carries herself so well. She's... Mm. Wow. Talk about somebody to watch for a career. Like, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Out of the cast that's new, because... you know, like we've got Alison Pill, who's been established for a while. She seems to be a very much one of the most up and coming out of the entire cast, I think.
Yeah. 100%. I've seen Michelle Hurd in other things too.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a good mix of
established and new actors, really.
I liked Raffi. I can't say I didn't like Raffi, but I kind of found some of the stuff that she would say really weird. Like, and I chalk it up to the fact that you just don't get enough time like you would in a full season of television, like a full 26 episodes or even a couple seasons, where you get to see a lot more Soji and Picard. And so those are the people that you learn the most about. Whereas, like, you know, Rios, Raffi, and Jurati are, you spend enough time with them, but not. You still want more. Like, you still don't quite know them because they're the crew. They're the secondary. They're not the main, you know, they're not the main digs. But yeah, I cannot say enough nice things about Issa Briones in as Soji. I just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the no nonsense gun blazing of Seven. She's the ass kicking and ass kicker that everybody wants to see and never gets to see in television Star Trek. So it was really fun to see that kind of stuff going on. And I like that she can make amoral decisions.
Yes. Yeah. And she's also, gone, like, you can tell that she's continued her journey of becoming human again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's got more humanity about her than she did back then. But she says that there's still a point that she will never be able to cross. And that's to have the kind of level of humanity and hope that Picard has.
Yeah.
And she plays that brilliantly in it.
Yeah. There's a great conversation between her and Rios at the very, very end where they're drinking into the sunset, literally. And she's like, "Well, I did the thing I wasn't supposed to do." And he's like, "Oh yeah, what's that?" He's like, "I killed somebody because I really didn't like them and they thought the world would be better, the universe would be better without them." And he's like, "Oh, okay." Like, that's not a light thing. Like, that's, but she says it like, "I'm never not going to be able to do that." It's so funny that she's got the emotions coming through from her humanity, but then also the analytical side of being a Borg is also just like, "No, statistically, the world is better off without you. See ya." And then just vaporize. You know, like, I love the fact that you've got that kind of, you know, character in Star Trek, which is just so, like, diplomatic all the time. You know, like, one of my favorite things about the Star Trek Next Generation series was whenever one of your favorite diplomatic characters fires the photon torpedoes, like when they're finally at the point where you're like, "All right, well, I can't reason with you, so let's get this done." And that's always the real, like, "Yeah," you know, like the fist pump moment, you know, stand up on the couch when they let loose, like that kind of stuff is always really satisfying. And Seven gives you that in this season of Picard, I find.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that we kind of got from Sisko in Deep Space Nine, where Q appears, and so Sisko punches Q in the face. And Q's just there taking it back going, "Picard would never hit me." And he goes, "I'm not Picard." and it's that exact thing there.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love about this entire crew is that they're all broken. You don't have it like on Next Generation where all the characters are, you know, they've still got growth and development, but they're in a good place. Whereas Picard is struggling with things. Raffi has been dealing with returning back to her alcoholism and stuff, right. You know, all these people that have been brought together have all had something that's happened that they're struggling to deal with. And this entire journey that they take with Picard kind of helps them get through that by the end of it. So like everybody gets redeemed and gets that kind of thing for themselves.
I wasn't really sure about Elner. The Romulan ninja boy, as I affectionately have called him. He does the odd fish out of water character. It's kind of a trope. I'm not really sure of the significance, other than I get that he's supposed to be like a surrogate son that Picard never came back to. Like, I mean, I get the parallels to, you know, parents that go off to war, or parents that have jobs like, you know, medical fields where they don't get to see their kids, and the kids feel abandoned at home. And then later on, when the guy retires and has more time, he's wondering why he doesn't have a relationship with his son. Like, I get the allegory, like I get the parallels. But as far as the script goes, as far as the plot goes, I kind of felt like Elnor was around because if he wasn't, you'd all be dead. You know, now how he kills people with phasers with a katana, I don't know. It's like, it's this classic Indiana Jones thing of bringing a, you know, a gun to a sword fight. It's just like, come on, man. Like, I just, there's a little bit about him that I thought was a little bit bizarre. I wouldn't have been opposed to him having a handgun. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be opposed to him being the quickest gun in the West sort of idea. Cause there is a bit of a Western vibe to this as they go on. And I wouldn't have really been bothered by that. So I didn't like Elnor, but I wasn't really a big fan either. Like, he didn't hit me in the heart the same way that I think he was supposed to.
Yeah. I do get where you're coming from. Absolutely. I think especially in the last half, the last half, you seem to have very little use.
Yeah.
I would like to think that season two is where we may start to see more development for him. And that's what I'm really hoping for. The beginning of it was kind of as you alluded to with the whole, you know, the father and the son kind of thing. But I think he really helps establish things for long-term viewers as to where Picard is at, because Picard hated children, couldn't stand them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we see him dealing with this kid at that level, which he would never have done a long time ago.
Right.
He's also kept his Captain Picard day that kids made for him on the Enterprise. He's ended up keeping that because he's become nostalgic to it. So it kind of shows a change in how Picard has grown over time.
Mm-hmm.
But also his entire point is that he will take on a challenge of something that is completely and utterly hopeless. And so it really kind of emphasizes that what Picard is trying to do is way out of his depth, more than we've ever seen before, to the point that even, you know, even Elnor is going, I'm only joining this because this is a completely hopeless fight.
Yeah.
And then as soon as things switch and it's suddenly Seven, he's like, okay, now I'm going to help Seven because now it's completely hopeless for her. So if he's following you, it's a good sign that things are going to go badly.
Yeah. And I find that it's an interesting kind of, like, you know, credo that his not religion, but like his sworn, what do you want to call it?
It's not, I guess, like mantra.
Mantra. Like the way that his upbringing holds him. I get it. It's unique, but it also is just like they spent all this time trying to convince him to join Picard, and he eventually saves Picard's life and says, "Yep, you are a lost cause. I am on board," literally. And then like the next episode, Picard's like, "I'll release you." And what? You just spent two episodes trying to get this kid on board, and you're like, "Now we're done." It's like, dude, like, and I think that in a way that I find that the script was a little flawed, they also kind of point that out in that Picard was also flawed, where he says, like, I told you to stay on the ship, and Elnor's like, I know, I ignored you. And then Picard says, thanks. You know, like, it is, it's a, when Picard says, thank you, I appreciate that. You know, you kind of get the, like, okay, like, just they understand the ludicrous kind of notion that's happening here, and they're kind of admitting it, but they're also saying, but it's Star Trek, kind of like, get on board sort of a deal. So I thought that, and I'm also not lost that, you know, Elnor being Picard's pseudo son, Soji being Picard's pseudo daughter. Like, I get the layout. Like, I get what they're trying to set up for Picard. And so I don't dislike the character. I was just kind of confused as to where he was supposed to fit into all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I feel that we may see more in season two, just because, like you say, he's had that kind of upbringing. You can see that he's starting to break away from that now that he's left the planet.
Yeah.
So that could be something that they could happen with.
Yeah. Now, burying the lead, I have not read up on any of this. I don't tend to do that about the media that I consume. I didn't know there was going to be a season two. I kind of thought that this was going to be Jean-Luc Picard, see you later, you know? And so
they, yeah,
I'm excited and happy, but at the same time, it's like, wow, this was such a good way to just be like off to the sunset, you know? And I don't necessarily know if I mean, on one hand, yes, obviously I want more Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard. But at the same time, I also have this nice little bow, you know, and I kind of don't want to tug on the strings. Do you know what I mean?
It definitely closes that chapter in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely love that they have done that. And, you know, it's obviously going to be, in a way, they needed to if they are going to have him kind of continue on, especially with the way that Nemesis kind of left things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that they, like, if this was the only season, it would be fantastic. The fact that they're doing more, I'm really excited about, especially as kind of the way that they set off, you know, and leave, it's, there's just so much more hope there.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you think that the show opens with the opening theme for every episode, and then at the very end, we hear that same opening theme in the end credits, but it feels very more Star Trek-like. The instruments that they're using feel a lot more Star Trek-like, and it has that kind of beat to it as well, where it's kind of like now we're going back out there, which I think does work well. But yeah, they've talked about having enough that they think to do about three seasons. So it's not going to be like a massive long series.
Mm-hmm.
They're only looking at just a few seasons. There's rumors that, I can't believe I've forgotten his name now. The gentleman who played the EMH, Robert Picardo. There we go. Robert Picardo may very well be returning. And he also went on to Whoopi Goldberg's show invited her in person to come back for season two.
I'd love to see LeVar Burton come back even for a heartbeat, because
yes, that would be cool. I think that at some point they'll have them all.
They have, well, because I mean, really, they knocked out quite a few in this first season, which by the way is probably my favorite thing about this series, was being able to see any of the reunions. Obviously, I really like seeing Seven of Nine. Have we ever seen Seven of Nine and Picard interact in Star Trek Next Generation?
No. It's assumed that because he was an admiral and she was famously the Borg that returned from the Delta Quadrant.
Right.
And the fact that he had been Locutus, that, you know, even if they've never spoken before, they certainly will be famous enough to each other to know who the other person is.
Right. But no, right.
But the way that she greets him suggests that they probably have had at least a meeting.
A meeting
even if
before.
It's just a formal gathering.
In this, like, 18 years of whatever happened. Then that's fine.
That's it. Yeah. Right.
But for me, the Riker, Troy, you know, at their house, you know, Riker cooking pizza, Barkanaut orders, you know, listening to jazz, like just like Barkanaut orders to the computer to like raise shields. Like, it just, I find it so funny that like, you don't expect him to do it, but like, there's all these little nods to the things that used to happen on the bridge of the Next Generation set, you know, that instead they're in Riker's house and the house has got a computer and has shields. And so he's like, shields up. And he's like, oh my God, it was such a fun kind of dynamic. But also, as I mentioned, like that dynamic of them removed from the command chain, where there's still that huge amount of respect and, you know, loyalty that Riker has for Picard, but Picard's in Riker's house. So like, he's the captain, like it's his house, but Riker is just kind of like, you're not going to tell me what's going on. Let me tell you what I know what's going on. And just, he just breaks it down. And just, the kind of stuff that you just can't do on the bridge of the Enterprise. He's like, I've never been able to do this, you know, officially. So let me do it now, because I can get away with this because I'm making you dinner, buddy. Like, I really enjoyed the back and forth there. I thought it was great. And any kind of stuff that they can work in to stuff like that with Geordi, or, you know, with any of the other characters, as long as they don't bring Q back, then I'll be fine. I don't
know. I'll reassure you in that I've seen, I can't believe names are terrible for me now, but the actor for Q,
John DeLancey.
Thank you. Yes. I've seen him twice now. Yeah, I've seen him a couple of times now, and each time he said that he has no plans to ever return as Q. He's too old to be able to have that level of energy. He's not really interested in that. So I don't think we'll ever kind of see that happen. But one of the things that I do love is that every guest that they brought in has not been fan service. Like, no. Fans absolutely excited, but it tells the story. Like you say, by dropping the command structure, you really get to delve into their relationship as people.
Stuff you don't see.
That they have. That's it. You know, the underlying stuff that's always kind of been there, they can explore it a lot more, and it makes sense within the narrative. You know, rather than just kind of like, oh, we're just going to throw Troy and Riker in there because they were in Next Generation. It doesn't feel like that at all. It feels earned for them to be there. No.
And the two closest people to Picard. It also gives you a window as to what those conversations around the poker table in that last scene in the in the Next Generation finale, what those conversations might have sounded like is Picard and Riker sitting around with a glass of wine talking about Romulans and like, I told you they would be up your ass for the rest of your life, didn't I? Like stuff like that was just a joy to watch. And speaking of that kind of stuff, we can get into the ending because we got to wrap this up. But also seeing Riker being able to Dukes up, you know, show up on the helm of, I don't remember what ship.
Yeah, it was something like the Shang.
It was the
Shang Chi or something like that.
Yeah. But it was like just that level of authority, that voices raised, give me a reason to blow you out of the sky. I'm going to give you an out. But like all phasers are trained on your head. Yeah. please.
Give me an excuse to kick your treacherous Tal Shiar ass.
Yes, like, I really don't like you, but I'm going to have to play the, you know, the diplomatic card because, you know, Picard's watching. Like, it's the kind of thing that I really enjoyed. And something that I didn't really realize about the original series in that Riker is the one that fires the torpedoes a lot of the times. Riker is the one that gets to punch, essentially, where Picard can't, because Picard needs to be the diplomat. And so... Yeah. It like, even though it's Picard's orders, like he would never, okay, you know, Riker would never do anything that wouldn't have the captain's okay. But it just kind of gives you that as an audience member, it keeps Picard as the political fearless leader with no scuffs on his cuffs. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Riker, you kind of want him to punch some people sometimes. and Jonathan Frakes, of course, has like just such a great, just a gravitas. Like he just has a weight when he kind of like puffs up, you know, and drops his voice and says like, shields up. Like just, I sit up in my chair like, all right, yep. All right. I'm here. You know, like that sort of stuff I find really, really satisfying as a Star Trek fan. So that I thought was great.
Yeah. It's amazing how close he looks to, his future incarnation in the finale, All Good Things.
Oh yeah.
Looks very similar to how he looks when he's on the bridge of the Enterprise D.
Yeah.
In the future as it comes in.
Yeah. So the question that I had about the starships that come in, of course, I can't remember it. He rattles it off very quickly as he's bragging to the Tal Shiar, saying like, I am at the helm of the most advanced starship in the galaxy, and I have a whole lot of them. But something that was very surprising to me is that they all looked the exact same. And anytime I've ever seen the Federation all zip in to save the day, it's usually a whole host of various different types of very recognizable Starfleet Federation ships, but they all kind of have like different fuselage, different saucer sections, blah, blah, blah.
So I had the same reaction as you. Right. And I went to a couple of my friends who, you know, I was watching it with... they'd seen it around the same time I was, and I was like, hang on, why is it all the same? You know, just thinking like, have they just copy and pasted just to save time? And one of them was like, no, they are different ships. I was like, really? And I took a look, and in fact, they are. The pointed saucer section is very similar on all of them, but as is the deflector dish, but the pylons, some of them in opposite directions, the nacelles are different. So it's just a new kind of... design language that they've got for them for a lot of ships. And he only bought the best. Like, he bought that part of the fleet where they are all that. There'll be other ships that will be older, smaller, less powerful, but he bought the ones that could fully defend themselves against 200 Romulan ships. Whereas if they bought some of the middle and lower class ships, they probably would have been completely wiped out very, very quickly. They would have been the cannon fodder, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were differences there. They didn't have any registries on them, so you couldn't see USS whatever. That could also be because they may just be freshly out of space dock from the fact that Mars, where most of the ships were built, had been done, so they may actually be freshly out of mothballs and stuff. So so it's that's kind of the reasoning behind it, really. But yeah, and even back during the original series, most ships were the Constitution class. And that was mainly a budgetary thing. We didn't get to see another ship that looked different that was Starfleet until Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, until that movie, where they suddenly had another ship, which is the Miranda class that Khan is on.
Right.
So that was the first time we saw another Starfleet ship that did not look like the Enterprise.
Hmm.
So it's just as time's gone on. But there you go. Anyway.
Cool. No, I mean, it's good to know. And I think the other thing, too, is that we often see these ships like either one-on-one. Maybe there's three of them. Mm-hmm. When there's a couple hundred of them, or however many there were on screen, they were really tiny. And I have to say that I watched this last episode on my tablet, which is big, but not as big as my television. So any kind of subtleties and stuff like that, I probably missed. But that's
good. Well, I had to go back and see it a second time,
right?
Because my reaction was the same as yours at first. Yeah. It's like all the ships look the same, but again, you also kind of taken in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like with everything that's going on, like it's a very tense situation, and Jonathan Frakes, to be honest, completely steals the scene away from the ships.
I didn't really care, the focus on them as much. You care nothing about what's going on. You're just so happy to see him bossing people around in the chair again. No, I agree. The other things that kind of stuck out to me, because we've covered most of them, I did really enjoy the Seven reconnecting with the Borg artifact cube. I thought it was cool, but they also portrayed it as very significant for the character, and I think they handled it well. In terms of she's not sure if she's going to come out of it, she's not sure if she's going to want to relinquish control of reconnecting to the collective, and
she could have ended up being the new queen.
Yeah, and I think because I think it keeps her flawed and interesting, they wrote it out of the story because Narissa vents all the bodies of the Borg into space, and so. There's no one left to control, so she can unconnect. The only thing she's connected to is the ship at that point, which she uses to get to Picard, but she doesn't abuse it.
Yeah.
And I think that's good because they established before she connects that she knows more about that ship and can control it at a level that no one else can without being Borg connected to it. She can just pilot it as like a physical person. And I thought that was really, really cool the way that they handled that. I like that they didn't just again make like they keep her flawed. Like she doesn't say like, and now I will reconnect of my own free will. They're like, nope, you wouldn't have been able to, so we have to kind of like figure out a way to not have that be your fate. And I liked that they did that. I guess this comes as a criticism, not in all of them, but holy fuck, there was a lot of fucks in Star Trek this time around. And I, while I get it, like there are some dire situations and some, and the one or two times that you hear it at first, you're like, okay, that was warranted. And I don't think it's any of the main characters. Like you never see Deanna or Riker or Picard or even Soji, I don't think, say it. But in the last half, specifically in the last two episodes, I kind of feel like they got loose and happy with it. And it started to take me out of what otherwise I would have been fully immersed in. And I just, it's because it's the kind of TV show you don't normally have that kind of language in, because traditionally, as we all remember, it was a network television show. And I think that they just, they fell into the trap of we're going to do it for the cool factor just because we can, even though it's not needed. I'm not saying none of them were warranted. I think that maybe the latter half, they could have pulled some. One or two over the whole season would have been fine.
I think they've done it to try and make the dialogue more real. I mean, we've had Picard swear on screen before as well anyway. I mean, albeit in French.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but, yeah. And also in Logan, too. Oh, sorry, Picard. Yes. You said, I see. I conflate Picard and Stewart. I'm sure he's probably used to that.
But in terms of Picard is the character. But the, like you were alluding to earlier, not alluding to, you mentioned it, where he and Elnor are kind of talking, and the fact that, you know, that he's just kind of thanks him. You know, it was a very real conversation. Then you've also got Jurati, who's sort of joking about the Picard maneuver and then saying, hey, didn't you do that? Like, have an actual Picard maneuver named after you when you were on the Enterprise and you did that thing? And he's like, it was the Stargazer.
Yeah.
And it's just, in that heat of the moment, it's just a very real conversation that's had. And I think that's where the script excelled, was giving you those real moments. Like the moments where he's talking to Deanna or to Riker, you know, and stuff. And so whilst, yeah, they probably did play a bit loose with them towards the end,
yeah,
I can still see why they've kind of done that to ground it a little bit more in reality for it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the banter, actually. Any kind of back and forth between Jurati and Picard in the last episode, I thought was really well done, because she's got a plan. She's got the secret little thing that she's being a double agent spy thing for. And you don't even realize what she's up to. They do a really good job of hiding. You know what's going to happen, but you don't know it's her that's going to do it. But I also really enjoy the conversation where he's trying to fly the starship, and they wanted to have this. I can't remember the name of the ship, but they know that you wanted Rios' ship to fly into the atmosphere and stand its ground against the Romulan 218 fleet, the sole ship. But I love that it kind of wobbles. because Picard is just like, okay, look, you need to do your thing, because I'm trying to fly a ship that I've never flown before. I haven't flown in like 40 years. I'm trying not to explode. And I lost it. Like, I've snickered a couple of times with the Riker and the Picard thing, but very seldom have I laughed out loud at the show, despite enjoying it very much. And like, that was one of those moments where I was like, like, I just like, yep, okay, got it. They have these moments where like he sits in the chair. See, and then the reverse is true the first time he does it, because he sits down and he realizes, I'm going to be gung ho and let's do this. And I don't know how to fly this thing. And so that I didn't find as funny. I found that kind of like that felt awful. Like I didn't feel good about that joke. Whereas whereas the other way around, where he's doing the thing, but with a certain level of uncertainty, has a better feeling about your hero Picard than it does when he just kind of says like, I can't do that. You know, it felt like the grandfather that can't turn on the TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where it left me, which I didn't like, you know, but that's where I just get defensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like there was one moment that I thought was really nice, and that's when he's walking across the bridge and he's about to sit in the chair, and then suddenly realizes, I'm not the captain. This is not my ship. That would be inappropriate for me to do so. Yeah. And then he just continues on. And it's just like, not a single word is spoken. Mm-hmm. Just completely his body language. And you just kind of like, again, it kind of gives you a sense as to who he is and where he's at.
No, I agree. I feel like I've seen that before. I don't remember where.
Maybe. Probably in All Good Things, because that's when he's in the future. And again, he's... you know, he's on the bridge of the Enterprise, he's on the bridge of the Pasteur, but he's not a captain of either of them.
Right. So, right. Could be. I feel like it was another Star Trek show, though. I thought it was maybe Discovery as well. I thought they might have had that kind of like little who sits down sort of thing. This brings us into the finale, the final scenes where Picard actually dies. And they established early on in the series that he's got this brain abnormality that will eventually kill him. It's not right now, but it's going to happen. In a way, you sort of feel like it gives him the push to get back out into space, because like, if not now, it might not be ever. Thankfully, as I mentioned, it doesn't rear its ugly head until the very, very last couple of episodes, where it starts to incapacitate him. And it's not in a way that he goes crazy. He just kind of is unable to stand up. Like, he just starts to have some malfunction, essentially, which I thought was also kind of fitting considering all the synthetic stuff that they're dealing with. So the ending for me went a little bit long, And while I'm 100% happy with how they did it and the surprise of how they did it, I felt it was a little Lord of the Rings. Like, I just, you know, Picard dies of this brain injury, this brain trauma, kind of in the laps of a whole, like, of this crew. And I kind of felt like it was off. Like, just the whole time I kind of felt I wanted him to have his last exhale in the heart, in the arms of, like, one of the generation cast. You know what I mean? Like, it, so it felt a little bit weird. I understand why. Like, I understand why it was the new crew and why they were the people surrounding him. Like, I get that. I found it weird that the last thing he says was he tells Raffi that she's right. And you don't get the history there because we've not seen Raffi interact with Picard outside of this series. You understand from a conversation with Rios that it's the one thing that makes her happiest is when someone tells her that she's right. And she never, you know, and it sounds like the men in her life and the business partners, the captains of her ship, don't often get to say it. So you get that, but you don't have that significance that you would had you seen an entire series or other, you know, timeline with Raffi, because they're estranged when they start this series. I found that was very strange. Also, it's not a fun thing watching one of your favorite characters in fiction die. I'm glad he wasn't blown up. You know, like, I'm glad it wasn't something like that.
Glad it wasn't what happened to Data.
Yes.
Exactly what happened to Data.
I'm glad that he didn't. I'm glad he didn't literally fall on his sword, right? I'm glad that he was going to die anyway. Instead of doing that, Jurati gives him a drug that will let him get through the next hour, 20 minutes, whatever it happens to be. It's Star Trek time. They don't really tell you. But knowing that it's going to kill him, and she's like, this will... And he's like, yeah, but I'm going to die anyway. Like, just it's just going to make it happen today instead of tomorrow. Like he breaks it down really succinctly. And I dug that. Now, when they first get to this synthetic settlement planet, they show you the Golem. And they say that Maddox was working on transferring, you know, someone's entire brain memory system, I don't remember the technical term that they call it, into a synthetic body. And immediately you can draw the conclusion, oh, okay, now I know what they're going to do. Like, I know that, I don't know how or who, but eventually Picard is going to be into the Golem. Like, you kind of see that coming. You don't know it's going to be Jurati. You don't know how they're going to do it. I didn't know there was a season two, remember, at this point in time watching this afternoon. So I thought they were just giving you this really cool ride into the sunset. We're going to kill the character. You're going to see that because we told you that was coming. But then this is how we get around it. And again, like, I'm just glad that they did that instead of the opposite of what Data did. Data sacrificed himself to save Picard and save the crew. I didn't want Picard to sacrifice himself literally to save the synthetics and have it just be this mirror thing. And they did that, but they did that in just the right way that it wasn't lazy writing. They really came up with a unique way to do it. How did you feel about Picard now being in a synthetic body?
I think it really wraps the entire premise of the synthetics up, because when you look at it, it kind of, if we go back to the first episode that we had Maddox, in fact, the only episode that we had Maddox physically appear in, the entire point was, is Data human? Or not rather, is he human, but rather, is he an individual with rights? Is he
a person?
Sentient? Is he a person? Exactly. And it's really kind of come about to, you know, synthetics are being deemed as, you know, they're not people. They are to be banned and all this kind of stuff. And then you've got Picard, who is, out of everybody that we've seen in this entire season, is the most human of all of them. He is the one that represents humanity and hope more than anyone. So he's there saying, look, these synthetics are just as valuable as any other life. You know, and nobody would, you know, would argue with the thought of Data being, you know, considered an equal, in the same way that, people still saw humans and Vulcans as equals as well. And now he is in a synthetic body. You've got the embodiment of humanity in the synthetic body that now has to go out and be that representation of that equality. And I think that that's where it all kind of ties in quite nicely for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I would add that he spends a good deal of a couple of episodes trying to convince the synthetics to allow him to represent them and fight for their cause and be their advocate to the Federation. And they are so reluctant, mostly because of the manipulation of the evil twin sister to Soji. But also just reluctant because he's not a synthetic. Like, how can you understand? Soji brings it up in a conversation with him in his room, where it's like, you want us to live, you want us to die. You're the one making the decision, no matter what it is. We want to make the decision. But now he can say we and mean it. And I love that because of his wishes and because of how they knew he felt about that kind of stuff, when Dr. Sung is explaining to Picard about the new physical form that he's in. By the way, it's not augmented. You don't have super strength. You can't run and jump and fly. And, like, we're not going to be. And it's kind of like a nice kind of little nod to the audience. Like, don't worry. We're not going to do CG Patrick Stewart jumping over buildings. Thank God. You know, like, but he also explains, like, and also you're not going to live forever. Like, you, everything is new. Everything is working, but we built in a self decay. So you will live as long as you were supposed to live without the brain abnormality. Which again, like, you know, in Star Trek terms, that could be quite a long time because of, you know, advanced medicine and all that kind of stuff.
When they suggest kind of like 10 years and he's like, can I have 20? kind of thing. You know, he's kind of like, I want a little bit, but just.
Yeah. And so he still does not know how much time he has left. Right. And I think that that's important. Like, it gives, so him as a synthetic now, or as a human presence, I'm not even sure how to quantify it. Like, as a human that has been transferred into a synthetic body, he still has a limited time. He does not know what that time is, which is then going to affect all the decisions that he makes because, as Data said, like, what good is a butterfly if it lives forever, right? Mm. They really do handle all that brilliantly. And of course, it leads you to the final scene where everybody is happy and healthy and on the bridge of the ship that I don't remember the name of, with Rios at the helm, and you get to see Patrick Stewart say engage, but not in a haphazard, like, oh, I guess we'll just start this adventure. It's much more confident. It's much more, everybody's in the same uniform. Like, they've created their own little crew, whatever their mission's going to be, etc. And there's a exchange between Soji and Picard as well, where she's like, now I'm free to travel now that they've lifted the ban. And Picard's like, me too. And remember, you know, I am one. And now he has this father-daughter relationship, and on a level where he can truly understand, like, what she is and what she's going through, because he is that too. And has been both. Like, he's now, like you said, the embodiment of humanity in a synthetic body. I really enjoyed the ending. I was not expecting it. I knew that he was going to die, but when they flipped to him and Data having that conversation in the construct thing, that's where I'm just really confused as to, I thought Data was dead.
Okay.
D-E-double-D dead. And so Data didn't die, or because someone got positronic neutron something or other, they were able to preserve his consciousness somehow?
They didn't get it from, basically, like, he's not able to remember the explosion. So the memory on Garzulli go up to a certain point. So he's able to extrapolate what's happened, but he doesn't remember it happening in the same way that Picard remembers the entire thing, because he was there and still alive.
Right.
Now, they, like, Maddox originally wanted to take Data. This is back in Next Generation. He wanted to take Data, disassemble him. And, you know, they said about potentially putting him back together, but Data was pretty confident that he would not be able to be put back. you know, and that it would effectively kill him. And that's why he was so opposed to it, because he didn't really want to die at that point in his life. But that he believed in what Maddox was wanting to do, and that he wanted to stay in touch, and eventually maybe they could get to a point. Now, it may be that what they've done is extract that the information that they've got from Data, put him into the system to try and analyze it, because that's been the big thing, is making the body, that's not a problem. Making the positronic brain, which is a genius work by Dr. Soong, the original Dr. Soong, the Soong's father that we see in the show, that's the real gold mine that they're striving for. And it may very well be, and this is my personal interpretation of it, I don't think they realized that he was consciously aware that he was there. I think that they've got the software's running, but they don't realize that he is consciously there and in this in this odd plane of existence as such.
Right. And we only get to see that because Girardi was able to capture Picard's brain at some point.
Yeah, and then he's being he's in that same system as he's being transferred. System.
And then you get to see the fireside conversation between Data and Picard, which gives everybody closure. And and then Data asks to be turned off, essentially, and they have this really poignant, very... moving scene. I don't remember precisely what Picard says, but it's very well done.
Yeah,
where he unplugs a bunch of thumb drives.
Yeah, how did that impact you? Like, first of all, seeing Data again, like with it not being like an imagination, just the fact that it was the real Data, and then that conversation leading to the farewell and his passing.
It didn't really affect me so much, because once I saw the Gollum, I kind of knew how things were going to go as far as Picard. But I was concerned watching it, because I was like, oh, don't get into this some weird esoteric Star Trek-y thing about where people go when they die. Like, I hope that they don't do this. But once I realized afterwards, oh, he was in the computer with Data. Once I realized where he was in that construct,
yeah,
that made more sense. I was worried that the construct was going to be some omniscient intelligence in the universe somewhere that had made this place where all things go, or all things pass through on their way to someplace. You know what I mean?
Like, including something synthetic like Data would really be pushing the boat.
I didn't want to go there. So I liked that it was a digital version of heaven. Or a digital version of the after, I shouldn't say heaven, the digital version of the afterlife, but it wasn't really. It was just what Data's consciousness was constructing as, you know, where he was stuck. And I really did enjoy that. I find it very, like, they did a good job of they don't pander, they don't explain everything to you. But you do get a little sense of like wonder and confusion, because Data knows where he is and what's up. But then he's like, how are you here? He doesn't ask that, because he knows Picard doesn't necessarily know the answer either. But he's just like, you're dead because I can read all the things and what's going on. Like, I get what's going on. But I don't know how you got here. I'm not sure how I got here. And that's what their conversation explores. But they do it in a very Data Picard way.
Yes.
In a way that I'm glad that they don't explain all the details. They do kind of let yourself, you know, it's the quote-unquote Star Trek science, where you're not really supposed to understand everything, because it just obviously doesn't exist. But yeah, I thought it was a good closing scene. The thing that I got more emotional watching the happy ending... with just like Riker and everybody flying in and Picard getting at the helm. And I found less the conversation with Data and more the memorial, where it's Soong, Girardi, Picard, and he's unplugging the orange data sticks from the system. That I found more poignant, because essentially it was a funeral. They're also playing some music. I think it's The Blue Skies.
It was that was playing there, which was a song that Data had sung at Riker and Troy's wedding. So it had, and it was at the very, in the very first episode, it's how that opened up. So it was a good bookend to things as well. It was also the Bing Crosby. Yep. Interestingly, it was the Bing Crosby version that they were going with. And he's related to Denise Crosby, who played Tasha Yar. I only found this out a few days ago. It's like, oh, interesting. Cool. But yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I liked it. I found that I was more emotional in a good way at that final scene where everybody is on the ship and they're all ramping up, and then they do the Picard says like engage, and they're off on their next adventure. And that's when, even though I didn't know we were going to get a season two at that point, I'm happy for it. But even though I didn't know, I liked the fact that they didn't just kill him. Like, it's not Superman v. Batman. At the end of that movie, Superman is dead. And it just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. And I feel like they understand that they had to kind of kill Picard because of the way that they... And then you know it's coming. They set it up in, like, the first episode. Mm. But I love the fact that they kind of say, well, you know, you've overcome this thing. You're in this new body. You're kind of good as new. But you still have a limited time left, and he just goes off on another adventure. And I think like that, the riding into the sunset after an emotional story is a much better way to leave the audience than had he died and had that crew got together and gone off and fulfilled his work or his dream or whatever without him there. Like it would have felt run of the mill. Like it would have felt kind of like expected, like television writing, you know, stuff that you kind of would see coming. Whereas this, I saw it coming when I saw the Golem, but how they executed it, how they set it up for the future, and how they interwove all these little subtle things about like his lifespan and all this. Like I really thought that it was a clever, clever way to give a somber ending, but also maintain hope. Yeah. Which you've mentioned a number of times in this podcast as the main theme of Star Trek. Mm. And I really think they did a fantastic job. I cannot recommend this series enough. You just have to muscle through the first four. It's like, well, the first one's really good, but then the next two or three are kind of slow.
Yeah, just as a kind of build up.
Once 7 of 9 shows up, you're off to the races. Like, I
really feel like that's where the total tempo kind of goes up. I do like as well that they brought Data back, and then like you're saying, like Picard has to die, and then he's brought back, and he doesn't, because that would be somber. But on the flip side of things, we have Data, who we think is dead, is brought back and then killed. So it's the complete opposite when it comes to Data, but still satisfying, because as we've said before, Picard didn't have that closure. I mean, it's wrecked him for the last 18 years. And then he finds that actually Data's not really been dead. He's kind of been alive this entire time. And with this short amount of time, and I think they know that they've got a short amount of time. And like you were saying, it's a very Data and Picard kind of conversation, because Data doesn't, you know, like you were saying, he doesn't say like, oh, where am I? Because that wouldn't be a Data thing. And he's been there for like 18 years anyway, right?
Yeah.
But they really get down to it. And one of the things that I think is just absolutely beautiful and wonderful, aside from them finally being able to say their goodbyes to each other and to get that closure, is that Data reveals that in this entire time of striving to become human, he found that the thing that makes him the most human is that mortality. He'd managed to get to a point where he got emotions from his emotion chip. He'd managed to mimic humanity as much as he could, but he found that even when he sacrificed his own life, which is something that he was able to do as an individual to make that choice, and he still couldn't die. He was still going to be, as long as he's plugged in, he is still going to be alive for all eternity. And, you know, and he would just keep running. So the fact that he was able to go, look, I want to end my life so that my life has that meaning, I just thought was so powerful and had that resonance to it.
And reflects my favorite line, or at least the line that stuck with me from the series, which is from Picard. He's talking to Soji about turning on the beacon and inviting these technological overlords to come and wipe the organics off of the face of the universe. To say you have no choice is a failure of imagination. I thought, just nothing to say in addition to that. I just thought it was an excellent line of dialogue that really sums up what they're, you know, what the whole series was about. Moving on into the Internet Minute to wrap up this episode. If you would like to help us make more podcasts, you can do so by going to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, where joining at any level will give you access to the member-only Discord, and because everybody is spending more time at home, access to the Barista Cut bonus episodes. So that's both at any level on patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We are listener-supported. There's no ads on the show. You guys are the reason we are still recording. At the time, we are, I believe, are at 19 patrons. That is the same, I believe, as March. So I always try to have at least one more person join the Patreon over the course of the next couple months. Obviously, we understand that depending on your situation, times might be tight. So the other way that you can support the show is by word of mouth, by telling other friends who are also spending a lot of time at home looking for things to do, that there is this really cool podcast that they could listen to. and it's something that, with an earnest recommendation to a friend, not necessarily your retweets, although those are fantastic too, but like really like sending an email or on the next FaceTime call with a relative or friend, you know, just say like, hey, you know what? Are you listening? Are you looking for something? You know, we just finished Picard. You should listen to this, because I think that it would be you know, good for everybody to have more things to do and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that is patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and of course thecitadelcafe.com. we're available wherever you know find your podcasts. So if you just want to recommend us by name, people can find us easy enough. I have a very simple pick this week, and it is some good news with John Krasinski, and it is what it says in the tin. It's basically just John Krasinski in his house doing a YouTube series about good news. It's honest, it's fun, it's clips from around the world of people supporting healthcare workers, of goofy stories of people trying to reunite, of kids visiting their grandparents through glass windows. Like, it's just a bunch of silly but also poignant, heartfelt stuff that's all good news. And of course, John Krasinski is hilarious. He's got Steve Carell come on, like invites some of his friends. Yeah, like it's worth the 15 minutes because of all the not so good news that we tend to hear about these days. I thought it would be fun to share. I'll have a link in the show notes at thecitadelcafe.com for that. But yeah, I can't really get into it because I'll end up spoiling all the good stories. So just go take the 15 minutes, stop your scrolling, and go just watch some good news with John Krasinski. That's my pick this week.
I've got one as well, which I know that you could listen to Patrick Stewart read the phone book, but you don't have to, because he's out there on Instagram reading Shakespeare's sonnets, which is just incredibly wholesome. He ended up reading one of his favorites. People liked it so much that he decided that I'm just going to read all of them. So he's now doing a sonnet a day, and it is fantastic. Wow. To see him do it. There was one that he skipped over, and he just said, to be honest, it's because I don't understand it enough to be able to do it justice. You know, and that's the thing. He's not just reading the work, like, he's trying to make sure that he delivers them in the best way that he possibly can. And when he comes across that one that he can't do, he'd rather skip it. But otherwise, he is doing a sonnet per day. And it's a wonderful thing to see, especially right now.
Yeah, I agree. I have not watched more than one. I watched the most recent one, which I believe is from today. Mm. And it's fantastic. And you can feel the earnest, you know, effort of that understanding coming through. Yeah. And I am far from someone that understands Shakespeare. If anything, I find it's usually something that I don't really get into, because I don't find I understand it, and I end up kind of glazing over. But sonnets being so short, I feel are a little bit, I don't want to say easier to understand, but when you've got someone as knowledgeable as Patrick Stewart delivering it to you, it has a bit of a translation. Like, it has more, what's the word I'm looking for? There's more of an understanding that's happening, because you've got this brilliant buffer between you and the page. And yeah, I was embarrassed I wasn't following him on Instagram, by the way. Like, I was like, how am I not following Patrick Stewart? Anyway, So that has been corrected, and I look forward to more sonnets over the next several days from Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yeah,
we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. That wraps up this episode of The Citadel Cafe. You can find everything we were talking about today at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show is, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter as well. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, or Spotify. And word of mouth, as I mentioned, is the easiest way to support the show. It's 100% free. Poke a friend in the arm, or these days, wave from across the street and say, hey, you should listen to The Citadel Cafe. These folks are awesome. You take or leave that last part, but just recommend the show to friends if you'd like to see it grow. Because ultimately, the more people that listen, the more people to follow, the more shows that we can do. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online, including my illustration and design portfolio at joelduggan.com. If you're interested in hiring me, then just drop me a line through the website. My other podcast is all about Minecraft at thespawnchunks.com. And you can follow me at Joel Duggan on social media everywhere. I will point you towards Twitch, where I play Minecraft and some other games at twitch.tv/Joel Duggan. You can also look for some live artwork coming there soon, too. Alistair, where can people follow you online?
I'm also on Twitch at twitch.tv/AlistairMcFly. I'm on Twitter as well at iMcFly. And I've recently also just put up some Minecraft resource packs. For anybody who likes Minecraft and Stargate, it's going to be a very small niche of you, but there are some resource packs there for you at omizod.com/Minecraft.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Make it so.
Engage.